Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast, episode number 54. And judging off of my notes here, this is actually looking at Bucky's Fifth Podcast. This is going to be number 4 on the SB Nation Team Brands Network. I am Jake Kokorowski. We have Owen Reese on the line, too. Fun show lined up for you this week. We're going to talk with 2019 walk-on Cooper Nelson, a conversation we had with him late last week about joining his father, former safety Scott Nelson. You may remember him as a Rose Bowl starting safety, proposed to his now wife and at the 40-yard line in Pasadena. There, we talk with Cooper about just his journey to Wisconsin, the decisions he made, how close he came to becoming a Gopher, for that matter, and just what made him decide to come to Madison and, be about a 20-25 minute ride away from his house in Sun Prairie. So that'll be a fun conversation you guys will listen to. We got a mailbag section coming up. Got a couple of questions coming up as well. Owen, man, let's start it off, man. How's the week going for you? And, a little bit of Wisconsin news going on there, a basketball game, some football news, obviously, with John Dietzen retiring, walking away from the game. Decent little week of worth of news.
Yeah, man, it's been good. Obviously, just like everyone else, trudging through this garbage weather we've been having over the past couple of weeks. I know the basketball team I help with in high school is trying to reschedule games like crazy. And like this week, I know two of them ended up getting canceled due to the weather, but we were almost ready to have 4 road games in 5 days just to try and get everything in. So between that and the Badger stuff, yeah, I mean, it's been fun. It's been good way to occupy yourself and try to ignore the 8 to 10 inches of snow that we've gotten over the past couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely. How many inches did you get over there?
It seemed like certain places were a lot more than others. I think there was a lot of drifting last day or two, but I know originally in that first wave, we got about 9 inches here.
Yeah, I know we got, from what we saw, it was the first set of snow, we got about 7 inches, and then we got about another inch and a half that fell later. Like, I did a second measurement after I basically scraped off my entryway to the front door. It had about an inch and a half, and yeah, it's just been maybe, and even I think when I got home from the game last night, it was maybe another half inch or so. So we got maybe around 9 inches altogether, and I'm ready for this to be over, man. My Florida blood is just, I'm ready for it to be done.
I'll tell you what, speaking of the cold, the Badgers free throw shooting, again, segue. Ethan Happ continuing to struggle in front of the line, and I think someone I saw tweeted it at you, I noticed it during the game as well, that he's actually starting to call out what side his shot's missing on. I don't know, bad news, Bears. Kind of interesting, Dan Dockich, when he was doing the game, was talking about, he's like, yeah, like if you put the ball, like put the weight on the ball of your right foot, and you just basically like flick your wrist, it'll at least go straight. Like then you can make it a distance issue. But a lot going on. And unfortunately for the Badgers, seemingly what Ethan Happ tried to make a more direct, simplistic process seems to be falling off the rails here a bit with this free throw shooting.
Yeah, that was big thanks to Scott Grodzki from CBS 58 in Milwaukee. He was down there. Nice talking to him. I think I said hi to him. Yeah. Before the game, but yeah, he tweeted that at us. So that was very interesting. And you have that. I mean, he misses all. I mean, he has a great game, 20 points, 12 rebounds, another double double on that end, but 6 turnovers, 5 in the second half, and he misses all 6 free throws. We won't harp too long on the game because it's done and over with, and we're not going to really dig in too much on that. But I mean, that contributed to a loss. Wisconsin was 5 of 12 overall from the charity stripe, right? And then on top of that, they were only 6 of 20. That's 30% from 3-point range. And I think obviously this team is not great from the line. When you take out Happ overall, actually, and you guys will see this in a takeaways post that hopefully will be put up in the next couple hours or by tomorrow morning about the takeaways from the game. I mean, Wisconsin's actually shooting not too bad without Happ. The thing is, though, Happ gets fouled a lot, and he brings down the team free throw percentage. So that's rough. The shooting, You also take a look in there too, Owen, the scoring drought, you know, nearly five, you know,
yeah.
5 minutes, 10 seconds worth of no points. And
which, I mean, just really warms my heart. but yeah, it's not always easy basketball to watch. And kind of to go back on Hap, like you're talking, it struggles with the free throw line within themselves are an issue, right? But the problem is the way the Badgers offense is set up. And I tweeted about this a few weeks ago, and a couple other people brought it up again last night. The problem is the swing offense, the basis of it is that it's positionless. And you talk about it all the time, and in years past, yeah, you know, you get Jordan Taylor and these guards posting up, and a lot of guards don't know how to play post defense, so that's an advantage for the Badgers. However, when you've got someone like Ethan Happ, who you can't really you kind of have to adjust the offense, because the whole point of the swing is that at all five positions, all five guys will get like the ball at every spot, right? So in like teams like with Frank Kaminsky and guys like that, where you really had these big dudes that could stretch the floor, that's what really stresses the defense. And when you've got a guy like Ethan Happ, who in himself is an extremely good basketball player, and he's well within his right to be in the player of the year conversation. And within that, though, the Badger offense will operate more smoothly next year. And it might not be like as talented, or you won't have that potential All-American candidate, but within like the construct of the offense and how it's meant to be run and how the Badgers want to run it, it'll be a bit more traditional that way. And it'll be they'll be able to run the offense how they want to run it. And it's not like that Ethan Happ is like forcing them to run some different offense, but the matter of the fact is that when the swing isn't allowed to have all five guys operate within the structure, it kind of bogs down. And getting to my obviously long-winded point here, when the offense struggles, they get the ball inside to Happ, right? Which is cool, except then it's when he gets fouled. Like the whole premise of him getting the ball inside is that he's really good around the basket and he's going to draw a lot of fouls, which is good when you make your free throws. He's not. So you're really kind of fighting uphill against yourself trying to get back into the ball game. And you saw that at times he'll get hot, but going 0 for 6 when you are really, you're down 2-3 before the game kind of gets out of hand in those last couple possessions. That's crucial. If he shoots 50%, they're right in it. So it's, kind of you're killing yourself death by 1,000 paper cuts that way, because your best way to get back into the game is the same way that you're struggling the most.
I mean, it's going to be one of those things that, I mean, with this team, and Happ is one of the most, he'll go down as one of the best players in program history likely. And just the, everyone talks about the point guard as in a, you know, forward's body, center's body at 6'10", and he can do things with his footwork that are second to none in the country. And but thing is, there are his Achilles heels, and the two of them are there's no outside shot or mid-range shot for that matter. And there's the free throws right now. And he's gotten progressively worse. I thought he did a little bit better last year for free throws as a redshirt junior, but this year he's shooting around 44%, just over that. So we'll see what the team's.
And like, and they mentioned that last night, Dan, they were talking about like all the different All-American candidates, and you know, Dan Dockich is talking, he's like, he hasn't made a shot outside of the paint the entire year. That's insane. You've got these, you know, Zion Williamson shooting threes at 290 pounds and trying to break the rim. And you've got guys, you know, these super impressive Jay Morant from Murray State's the 6'7" guard that can do everything. And the whole premise of their game is you can't focus on one thing, because they're at least, they're maybe more so with Morant than Williamson, but you can't sell out on one thing. And that's what makes Happ so good and so remarkable, is that defenses really can kind of sell out on him, because even if you force him to give the ball up and allow other teammates to succeed, you're at least keeping it out of his hands, right? But these other guys, like, that's the whole point. What makes them so dangerous is that they're able to do multiple things. So by no means here are we killing Ethan Happ. What he's done is seemingly, you know, inconceivable, that in the year 2019, you can be an All-American and potential player of the year candidate in the country, not only your own conference, but in the country, and you haven't made a shot outside of 5 feet. That's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean,
but like we said, it goes into the issues with the offense.
I mean, and that'll be, again, you know, we'll look at next year down the road, but for now, it's what the team is right now with what they are. And they just didn't hit the shots well. And credit Michigan State too. We'll go on to football in just a few, just a minute or so, but just to wrap it up, give Michigan State credit too. You know, Cassius Winston, amazing game, 23 points, game high, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, really played well in my, I think, maybe the second time I've seen him play. And it was just a phenomenal just how he could go in transition, but also pass the ball around. And great guard, complimented and called him a consummate point guard after the game too. And he's just a really good player. And you tip your cap to the defense there for Michigan State, where they played the 3-point line tough and Wisconsin just couldn't connect even on the open shots they did receive, really. So again,
well, and they completely erased Demetric Trice and Brad Davison, which is like the whole concept of the Badgers offense playing well right now is that, well, you can't double team Hap when everyone else shoots well. The problem is between Winston and the McQuaid kid, I can't think of his first name. They absolutely should. I mean, Trice and Davison combined for what, I think 7 points, and three of them, Davison hit a 3 the second possession of the game.
That was 11 points overall.
That's
11 points overall, 4 of 18.
Yeah, that's all the production they got out of those guys. And really, like I said, they completely shut down the Badgers' secondary or like counterpunch. So when all you're doing is sitting on that jab, it's a little easier to deal with.
4-18 overall from the field, a combined Trice and Davison, 11 combined points. Davison had 2, Davison had 9, Trice only had 2, and they both they shot a combined 2 of 10 from 3-point range. So, and you know, still, you know, and there are no moral victories here whatsoever. I will say they were within one possession for the good part of that game, for the good part of the second half. And, you know, that shows even with a poor shooting team, this team can contend. It's just a matter of them getting over that hump offensively, where in that 5-minute scoring drought, if Hap, you know, and you'll see in the takeaways post, Hap had the free throws, you know, an opportunity to take the lead, and he bricked both free throws there. And that hurt them. And
between that and the Michigan game, like you're right in the game, the whole game with 2 top 15 programs in the country, Michigan, arguably a top 5 program. And really, they probably win the Michigan game if Charles Matthews doesn't go off, you know? So like they're right there. This is by no means are we condemning the Badgers basketball season for the rest of the year or anything. It's just kind of frustrating to watch. And I'm sure it's much more frustrating for them to play the way it is right now, just because they need, you know, they're very, they need that synergy. They need one to help the other, the interdependency. And right now they just don't have it. And that's until it, and basketball is a cyclical game, and I'm sure it'll come back around, but for the time being, it's a bit of a beating your head into the wall situation.
Yeah. And well, you know, we'll go next week and we'll talk more basketball next week, I think. When, once we hear a little bit more about the spring football schedule from Wisconsin, we can start doing our position previews as well, probably start next week or the week after, I would say, because obviously we have a ton to talk about with those positions. So, but go heading into football for that matter. And for, you know, the last thing on basketball, maybe I'll say they have a 6-day break now to kind of lick their wounds, kind of get back to classes, get things right. And they face Illinois coming up on Monday. So that'll be their next game. And then they go to Northwestern that Saturday after. So for now, you know, we'll see how Greg Gard's team responds. They have an opportunity, I think, to win out the rest of the year. It's going to be tough. I think they'll fall at least once just due to the nature of the Big Ten, but they could still wrap up a top 4, top 5 seed, I think. And they, you know, to win the whole thing, the whole conference regular season title, a lot has to go right. And if you saw Jim Polzine's tweet earlier today, make sure you check it out. A lot has to go right now after those 2 losses. But this team, I think, still top tier in the conference. It's just a matter of putting things together overall. And like you saw in that 6-game winning streak. But going on to football, with that, another big news. You guys saw it on Bucky's 5th quarter, and I'll touch on this real quick. You had Dakota Dixon be named the 2018 Jason Witten Collegiate Man of the Year. Congratulations to Dakota.
Super
cool. Yeah, very cool there. And obviously well-deserved for his story and just what he meant to the team. And, but, you know, some other news. Earlier this week, John Dietzen, left tackle, left guard for Wisconsin, announces that he left the game. He's going to retire essentially from football due to, quote-unquote, numerous injuries. And this is a player that fought back a lot of injuries, still played. To me, reminds me of a Kyle Costigan from 2014, and what you know, from, I believe I've heard stories or there have been reports about how much he battled through. So really, it's a, this is going to be a, you know, it's a tough loss for the line just because of the depth. I mean, this is one more player that really is not, you know, obviously he was on a, you know, I guess you can call it a pitch count or a snap count for, you know, how he was feeling and dealing with his multiple, you know, his, I don't know if it was multiple, but I know he was dealing with ailments throughout the year. You could just tell. And you saw that's why.
Multiple throughout his career.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so there, you know, Cole Van Landen took over, you know, at left tackle a lot. And I think he's prepped for that year. You know, best wishes to John. He was always, you know, always great to talk to for media wise. And also, I always remember that mullet from the 2015 season. No, it was a 2016 season. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. But yeah, so it's one of those things too, where Dietzen, he's just a big guy. And you and I, can kind of speak to this being in the media availability room and stuff. We're around a lot of big players, obviously. But I know Dietzen was always one, and he slimmed down a bit this year. I think he said he was around like 325 or 320, but he's just a large human being. And the matter of fact is, being that size, over an extended period of time, putting the amount of stress on your body that you do, you're always running the risk of injury. And I know that he's a guy that, as I mentioned, he's battled foot injuries, ankles, knees, hips, about anything you can ask for in the lower body. I know Dietzen has had issues with, and when you're that size, I know 2 years ago he was listed at like 6'6", 336. He's a huge dude. You know, by many accounts, we've seen players tell, you know, he's the strongest guy on the team. And I know David Edwards mentioned that he's the toughest guy he's ever played with. So certainly a guy with a lot of respect within the locker room. It sucks that you see him end his career this way. Dan Volz a couple years ago, Walker Williams, Ray Ball, all guys fairly recently that weren't able to, Jake Maxwell, all guys that weren't able to finish their careers due to injury. And you hate to see that, but unfortunately, it's a bit of the nature of the beast playing offensive line and being that size with the wear and tear you have. So at that same point, really bears some credence and shows how impressive it was that guys like Michael Dieter and Bo Benshaw, Dieter with 54 starts and Benshaw with 49 over their careers, how durable they were, because it really is, you know, those guys are in a 3 hour long car wreck every weekend. So the way that they're able to keep going and keep their bodies. Well, a bit of it's luck, but a lot of it is the preparation they put in and stuff. So a testament to those guys' durability, but at the same time, kind of peels back the curtain a little bit as to, you know, some of the guys, some of the stuff that these guys are dealing with on a week-to-week basis that, you know, you don't always hear about or see on TV.
Yeah, and that kind of leads us into our first question, mailbag question. We're going to have a second mailbag question to end the show. After we play our interview with Cooper Nelson, the 2019 walk-on signee for the Wisconsin Badgers, one of the seven official that were on the National Signing Day page. But going back to the mailbag question about regarding Dietz in the offensive line, you know, the basically Morgan, thanks for him for submitting the question and basically asking, you know, the reason that he decided to retire and how that'll impact, like, how will it impact the young linemen that came, come in this year. And that's, you talk about this year, you're talking about Logan Brown, the five-star offensive lineman, and then also four-star offensive lineman from Indiana, Joe Tippmann. And I mean, I think you and I can go back and forth on this, Owen. With Logan Brown, obviously there's a lot of hype regarding him, one of the highest rated ever to commit to Wisconsin, next to Josh Oglesby, another offensive lineman, a kid that really already looks the part, you know, 6'6", 6'7". I know he's listed at 285, but I thought, if I'm not mistaken,
he weighed in at 307
at the
All-Star game.
Yeah, at the All-American Bowl, from what I think it was 24/7 Sports that had reported that. You know, so, I mean, he already has that Wisconsin lineman body. It's going to be a matter, I think, the strength and conditioning during the fall or during the summer conditioning aspect will take a huge will be a huge impact if he can add a little strength onto there. But yeah, I think it influences more Brown than Tippmann at the moment. But yeah, maybe that's because of the hype. But it's also because of the position with left tackle. Who figures in now that Dietzen I think you and I both assumed he's going to slide back into left guard. It wasn't confirmed, but I thought he would move back into left guard a la Michael Dieter did for this past season when he was out of left tackle, and that would allow Van Lannen to get those reps. But I think it obviously one more person down that can play both tackle and guard, that does open up some ability for Brown, possibly if he can pick up the offense relatively quickly to get into the two deep. I don't think he starts unless something happens to the offensive line where you have, you know, Van Lannen or a guy like Logan Brusco down. And then, you know, there's a guy like David Mormon, who's going to be a redshirt senior, but also a guy like, who's the other right tackle? Our guy that's thinking about right tackle. There's Bruss and then Tyler Beach. I'm sorry. There we go. From Port Washington. I think he could be, you know, that could be a top four, you know, the four top tackles. We'll see if Brown can break into that. He's not enrolling early. He's not a mid-year enrollee. So I'm not necessarily, you know, it's hard to gauge how much someone can pick up so quickly. Like if someone's a Jonathan Taylor, that's huge, or Danny Davis, who picked it up his first year back, you know, how those two picked it up in 2017. But I'd like your thoughts on it, you know, but I to me, it's always hard. And I think you may agree with this. When you don't see them in pads, or when you don't see them in pads or practicing, it's hard to talk about where you could see them in the depth chart right now. But I think he's got a chance. It's just a matter of how he reacts in conditioning in the summer, and then how he progresses with the knowledge of the playbook during fall camp.
So to be honest, I don't think that John Dietzen's injury has much to do with Logan Brown at all. I think that anything that he's able to pick up would, like I said, this is completely speculation on my part, but I would venture to say somewhat educated speculation that with how Cole Van Lannen played last year. And I guess now if the point was that John Dietzen was hurt and that was the reason for the most part that they obviously wanted Van Lannen on the field, but if he was hurt and that's part of why they were rotating, then maybe that makes some more sense. And maybe that I'm kind of off here as far as him moving back to guard. But my thoughts are they've got, so I talked about this a bit yesterday. So with Dietzen gone, the Badgers have like six interior linemen on scholarship, which is not a lot. Especially considering Caden Lyles just came back. I think if we're talking about the guys that are coming in, I don't think it really impacts anybody. The person I might venture to think that it may impact would be Joe Tippmann, and here's why. So Logan Brown and Joe Tippmann are both listed as tackles. In 2020, Jack Nelson and Trey Wettig are both listed as tackles. I can tell you right now that at some point, those four will probably be four of the top five offensive linemen at UW while they're on campus. At that point, you can't play all four of them at offensive tackle. So theoretically, two of them are looking probably to bump inside at some point, and Logan Brown's not going to be one of them, and I doubt that Trey Wettig is probably going to. So at that point, you're looking at Joe Tippmann and theoretically Jack Nelson. So I guess that leads to my point with Joe Tippmann. If he's able to pick up guard, I think that that would impact him much more than Brown, because at least, and like I said, this is a lot of speculation, I guess, but Cole Van Lannen and Logan Bruss, I would say, are pretty safe to pencil in, at least at this point, as your starting tackles. Tyler Beach is there. Michael Furtney is there. Those are guys that have been brought in fairly recently that should have a chance to compete to be on the two deep. I think Logan Brown's like physical gifts can certainly be a catalyst in that, and he could be like an unaccounted for element, I suppose. But I really don't see many situations where they want him to play more than the four games that they're allowed to, simply because they have enough bodies at the tackle position, which is where it kind of leads inside the inside stuff, where as of right now, they don't have a lot of experience. So I think that would probably impact Tippmann more, to be honest. If his future could be potentially at inside anyways, that's probably, like, as of right now at guard, there's four guards that I would say that are like listed on the roster, and three of them I'm for sure about. The other one, I'm not even sure, because they just list him as an O-lineman on the roster and we've never seen him play in a game yet. So Jason Erdman, David Mormon, and Josh Seltzner, to me, are the three guards right now that are like, I'm sure Caden Lyles will fit into this at some point, but we're not there yet. So where I'm at right now is what you know, right? Mm-hmm. So Jason Erdman has played guard and center in the past. So he's clearly not going to play center right with Tyler Biotish there. So that's one guard. Caden Lyles is listed as a center, or has been. He's clearly not going to play center with Tyler Biotish at center. So however you want to deduct that, Caden Lyles probably moves back to guard at a certain point. He's probably still your backup center, which is a super cool luxury to have that Erdman, Biotish, and Lyles have all played center before. So, like, that's a huge feather in the cap to have as far as if anyone were to go down, if Biotish was to get hurt. Okay. But at this point, you've only got three guys that have, like, been on the two deep that are at guard right now. And that's Erdman, Moorman, and Seltzner. The fourth guy I have listed at guard on my roster breakdown is Alex Fenton, simply because there's way more bodies at tackle than guard. I have no proof here that he actually plays guard, but it makes sense to me that they would have more than three guards on the roster and not have like nine offensive tackles. So just again, this is a lot of me kind of putting the dots together here that may or may not be there, right? So I guess long answer short to your question, I think Joe Tippmann probably gets impacted more because I think, and this is a lot of projection, I think Joe Tippmann probably ends up inside at some point. So at that point, he might be a guy that gets on the field a bit quicker, because if you theoretically have Erdman and Lyles as your guards with Moorman and Seltzner behind them, in which one of those three presumably also plays center, or if Biotish were to get hurt, Lyles or Erdman move to center and another guard pops in, I think that's probably where Joe Tippmann can all of a sudden scratch that too deep or be very close, more so than climbing over Van Lannen and Bruss and Beach and Michael Furtney and Logan Brown in that aspect. So again, like I said, this is a lot of me putting the dots together. I guess my personal opinion or how I kind of see things working out within the next year or so, I don't think it really impacts Logan Brown. I understand the hype and I don't fault anyone for thinking that, but I guess to me, whether or not John Dietzen's on the roster or not probably didn't impact the tackle situation a ton. I could be completely off, but just kind of where we were at, I think that's,
I think probably the only reason why I was thinking that was just due to the fact that he could swing back out. Let's say, you know, Erdman takes over that. I mean, with Dietzen, like, and maybe this goes into, I mean, we've already talked about what this means for the offensive line going forward, and you laid it out already, so we don't even have to cover that subtopic because you talked about the rotating guards where Caden Lyles is coming back. You have Jason Erdman, who can play all the interior line positions, and then you have Josh Seltzner, who received meaningful reps during fall camp as well in that fact. So, but you know, so you have those guys and David Moorman, who on the depth chart for the 2018 Pinstripe Bowl was listed as number two left guard behind Michael Dieter, even though I think Erdman would be the one to take it over. So you have those guys,
and Mormon's,
you know, and so
senior. I think that's something too that we kind of talked about a bit a couple of weeks ago, but like, he's going to get every chance. He's above, you know, to be a swing guy in the inside. Right. Caden Lyles, right, is our recruit. And I know him going over to the defensive line is a huge take one for the team thing. Because I don't think many people, I mean, obviously like in the moment, the coach would have been like, really, you can't do that. But like, from looking away from 100 feet away, like, I don't think many people would have blamed a 4-star offensive lineman for being like, no, I really don't want to play D-line. So I think that's a big, big take one for the team thing for him. And I think that I know Coach Chris has talked glowingly about him regarding that situation, as well as him as a player in general. So just, again, me trying to read between the lines here a bit, which I know can be a bit tough with Chris. I would be surprised if Caden Lyles isn't like getting time at the very least. So then just simply, if you're playing the body game, I think that Moorman is probably in Seltzner or the backup guards, but both have I guess worked their way into this, but it's a bit of an odd piece. But like, Moorman being an older guy, I think certainly plays in his favor. He's been around Rudolph for a long time. He's played multiple. I think he came in as a tackle and now he's been moved inside. I don't know if he's gotten much reps at center, but having those like types of guys like Micah Kapoy, I think could probably be a good role for David Moorman this year. A guy that hasn't played a ton, but has been around for a while. And I know Joe Rudolph has always talked about, he's going to get his five best offensive linemen on the field, but having that versatility, I think it means a lot as well. And you saw that with Kapoy. And I think that Moorman could be in a similar situation there, being a fifth year guy that's just been around right. a lot of football.
Yeah, and I mean, the only reason why I thought maybe Brown was that because Dietzen could play left tackle. And I mean, I know I segued with it where I thought Dietzen would be in at left guard and then Erdman would be at right guard. But now I feel like, and we'll get into our projections, but that's why I thought Brown maybe would have a shot, because if now, let's say, Moorman can slide in left guard, then that opens up the fourth tackle spot, and maybe that is Brown at the you know, behind Van Lannen. So I like I said, it, you know, it, maybe that comes to, that's why I was thinking it may impact Brown more, but maybe even Tyler Beach could be a swing tackle that could play both sides too. And like, this is all speculation, right? We'll know more once we watch more spring ball. So it's an interesting conundrum to see how this line is going to be. It's going to be a completely outside of Biotish and Van Lannen and Bruss. I mean, it's going to be new.
Yep.
You know, or I mean, or in terms of starters, technically, Erdman has played a lot. Bruss has played a lot last year. He's not just a right tackle. He got left tackle time at Northwestern, but he also, you know, was a jumbo tight end, basically a pseudo tight end in their jumbo package alongside Erdman. So those two got a ton of looks there. And then Van Lannen took a lot of snaps off of Dietzen's back and hip and ankles and whatnot last season too. So he's ready. So I think, I mean, and someone was, you know, tweeted at me saying, you know, ping me in a conversation where Bill Conley had rated Wisconsin, I think it was like the top five offense in the conference, or maybe it might have been Nation. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but at Bill Conley stuff for his S&P plus rankings. But, you know, someone was complaining like, oh, they're, you know, Wisconsin's, they're just returning one starting offensive lineman, and they're still this. It's like, it's technically these players will be getting more reps, so we'll see how that changes their type of game. But there's a lot more experience than I think people get, that people know heading into this season. And it's, the thing is, though, the two deep is going to be drastically changing. And I think that's where you and I will go next before we get to the interview with Cooper Nelson, the Sun Prairie wide receiver that committed as a walk on and signed with Wisconsin as part of the 2019 class. I'll have you go first. What are your way too early predictions for the O-line two deep for next fall? Let's start with left tackle.
Well, okay. Before I go way too early here, I don't mean to bounce back, but that's what I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but that's a huge point I have, is that for so long that Michael Dieter and Bo Benshall and David Edwards themselves, but along with like Micah Kapoy and those other guys, there's been a ton of familiar faces for a long time. And with Cole Van Lannen and Biotish and now Bruss and Erdman, those are basically every lineman that's gotten a rep over the past couple of years, give or take. There's been a couple here and there, but for the most part, probably 99% of the reps that the O-line has gotten in games the past 3 years has been Cole Van Lannen, John Dietzen, Jason Erdman, Michael Dieter, Bo Benshall, Tyler Biotish, David Edwards, right? So like most of those guys are gone. If you count, for the sake of this, we'll count Dietzen going into the draft and retiring, right? Because it's about the same thing. They're not coming back. So you're losing four of your starters that are all three or at least 2.5 year starters. That's a ton. Between Benshall and Dieter, both, that's over 100 games. Dietzen started for 2.5 years. David Edwards started for 2.5 years. That's like 18 years of starting experience. No, that's a lie. 13 years of starting experience. That's just a lot of football that's been played. So moving forward to that, like, because those guys have been on the field, other dudes have just been like being brought in. They're just sitting there and they're waiting in the wings. That doesn't mean they're not good football players. Doesn't mean they're not talented. That doesn't mean they're not like ready to go. Which, I mean, obviously we don't know some of that, but like, that's part of the deal, is that Chris didn't like the depth that was at O-line when he got here. So when he got back, that was the whole priority, was to build up the O-line. And this group that's leaving has basically been there the whole time he's been there. So every effort that they've made into building the offensive line is now going to come forth this year because those guys are gone. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like, that's a big, I didn't want to completely sidebar off of here, but the whole point is that like, this offensive line could very well still be a high rated offensive line. Just because they weren't playing doesn't mean they're like not good. They were just sitting behind very good players. Dieter will be picked probably in the top 100 picks. Ben Shaw is probably somewhere around there, the fourth, fifth round. Tyler Biadasz is probably a top 50 selection next year's draft, which I would anticipate he would leave. And John Dietzen is probably a guy that's an undrafted free agent just due to his injury history and other traits. But I mean, there's four professional level offensive linemen leaving.
Well, David Edwards, so, like, too. It's not remember, like remember David Edwards as well, where depending upon what happens.
Absolutely.
Where I mean, right. So where would he go, by the way?
It's a lot of guys. I remember Mike. What was that?
Where would he go, by the way?
Okay, so this might be a hot take. I think David Edwards is going to be picked in the first round because I think he's going to athletically test extremely well. I have yet to do a formal evaluation of Edwards, but my spit take would probably be that he's not a top 50 player in this class. I think he has the potential to be, but I think he still has a lot of things that he still really needs to work on. I know he played hurt a majority of this year, so I'm not going to bag on him for that. I just think that he's probably a bit more raw than people would like to admit. And I think he's going to test really well. I think he's a candidate to like run under a 5-1, which will be very enticing. And I think he'll get drafted probably higher than he maybe should based off his athletic testing. So I'm going to go there. I'm going to say he's probably somewhere between like 20 and 35. I would imagine that he'll come off the board there. But I guess back to my point though, is that for so long, and I remember Michael Dieter, they talked about him when he was redshirting, which was Melvin Gordon's final year in Madison. God, I'm old. But Michael Dieter's point was they're like, yeah, he would probably start on multiple teams in the Big Ten. He's just simply redshirting because he's not good enough to beat one of the five guys on Wisconsin's O-line. That's not necessarily an indictment of the player behind them. It's an endorsement of the person in front of them. So I guess to get back to my point here is that these dudes that are all having this opportunity now have sat behind guys, not because they're not talented or because they're not able to do it, but because they've been behind like NFL dudes. So I understand the skepticism there, but like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this offensive line doesn't miss a ton as far as like productivity as a unit. It might not be as NFL talented this upcoming season as the years in the past, but like, I guess that would be a misguided, at least thought process to me, is that like, well, they're losing a bunch of guys. How are they still supposed to be good? Like, it's not like the guys behind them are bad. It's just because the guys that have been playing have been really good. So anyways, to segue off of that, way too early, too deep, I would go probably something like this would be left tackle Cole Van Lannen, number one, Tyler Beach, number two, or Michael Furtney, number two, left guard Caden Lyles, number one, David Mormon, number two, center Tyler Biadasz, number one. And then the only other center on the roster is Blake Smithback, who's a walk-on. So I would probably venture to say that Erdman and Lyles will both split those second reps. Yep. Theoretically, maybe Mormon works his way in. Maybe Seltzner does. Who knows? At right guard, I would put Jason Erdman and Josh Seltzner and a one and two there. And then at right tackle, I would have Logan Bruss and Tyler Beach. I'm still operating under the assumption, I mentioned this the other week, that Alex Hornibrook is still going to be the starting quarterback until I know otherwise. That's just how I'm going to assume, or try to kind of put things together here. So, and we saw this with David Edwards being much more athletic than Van Lannen and Dietzen, is that the blind side protector for the left-handed quarterback is the right tackle. And Logan Bruss is probably the best athlete, maybe sans Logan Brown, on the offensive line coming in. So that's where they're going to put their guy. And that's where he played last year. He replaced David Edwards, and he played pretty well. So the right guard is the everyone, obviously, on the offensive line for Wisconsin is a primary run blocker. But like, your premier pass blocking or premier athlete tackle will be the right tackle, as opposed to it is on the left in normal offenses when your quarterback throws with the correct hand. So at that point, so I would probably put the starters are Van Lannen, Lyles, Biadasz, Erdman, Bruss, and then the back line being some conglomerate of Michael Furtney, Josh Seltzner, David Mormon, and then Tyler Beach with, like I said, probably the second center being either Erdman or Lyles, whoever. In the case that Biadasz would get hurt, one would move there, and the other guard, either Mormon or Seltzner, would likely bump up into that other spot. But that's kind of how I see it right now. Gotcha. So I'm going to let you talk. I just like 35 minutes. So I'm gonna let you talk and we're gonna have a
no worries. I'd say left tackle, Van Lannen right now, I'd say Mormon, as maybe the number two, reason being, I remember when Joe Rudolph talked after, we all thought that Van Lannen wouldn't play in the Rutgers game due to the fact that he was listed as out for that game. And Bruss had taken over, you know, some snaps in that Northwestern game, the game prior. And he had mentioned there was going to be a competition there too, where he thought Tyler Beach and David Mormon were there for the, you know, for kind of battling for reps there, could battle for the competition. So they thought that left tackle was going to be good in terms of spelling John Dietzen. So I think Mormon could be there. Left guard, yeah, I think you and I have our guards flipped. I think it could either be Lyles or Erdman. I'm saying Erdman just because I know that he's backed up. He's done stuff with Dieter on that extent where, you know, learning the plays, or you see there's an article by Jeff Patricus during the season talking about how Erdman had to prepare not just for the jumbo line. I think it was right after the Iowa game. But just talking about how he had to learn tight end and then center, and then also Michael Dieter's left guard spot. So for now, I'll put Erdman in there.
Also, let's talk about the real hardship he had that week, trying to switch between jerseys. Yes. If he was number 78, he had to go in to play O-line, and having to wear 96. Those jerseys are not loose. From personal experience, I can tell you that Jason Erdman would not be able to get them on and off with his pads on. So let's talk about the real hardship that he faced here, having to switch between jerseys. Those jerseys are not flattering to your figure, and they are not loose, and it's a hard time to switch jerseys. I give him a lot of credit because that's a lot of work.
Hashtag O-line problems, folks.
Hashtag O-line problem. Big time. As someone that had a backup running back put my jersey on at Carroll for 4 straight years because I could not do it, respect to Jason Erdman.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I think Erdman gets that. Mormon. You know, like I said, he was listed as the number 2 left guard during the Pinstripe Bowl game notes. So I think there's there. I'm wondering, is Fertney a guard? Is he a tackle? I want to see more of him during spring ball. I think that'll be something to watch there.
100% could be a guy that bumps in because, like I was talking about, they just simply don't have the numbers inside that you'd think. I have Alex Fenton in there in my spreadsheet. That doesn't mean anything. That could very well be Michael Fertney. And my 2 deep could be completely toast right now. But that's 100%. Fertney and Alex Fenton, who was Fenton was brought in the same class. He and Caden Lyles and Logan Bruss and Tyler Beach and then walk-ons, Josh Seltzner and Blake Smith back, are all redshirt sophomore offensive linemen. And those guys are kind of a bit of a mystery at this point, at least with Fenton, because he hasn't broken in anywhere, so I guess we really don't know outside of reps where he's going to be at. So between him and Fertney redshirting last year, those are like the two for sure wild cards that could end up at either spot, really.
Yeah, and I got Biadasz and Erdman first team, second team for center, Lyles and Seltzner first team, second team for right guard, and then also right tackle Logan Bruss, and I got Tyler Beach at left tackle, though I think Beach could be a guy that swings. Just based off of that Rudolph conversation that he told reporters back in like late October there. So, and we'll see where Logan Brown ends up. I think he could very well be a player that, you know, like I think if he progresses to that point, maybe he is one of those tackles that depend upon where Mormon sits. And if there's injury, and obviously there could be injuries, and there's always going to be injuries on that line at some point. So having that versatility for a guy like Mormon could bump inside, take some reps there. Maybe that opens up the door for someone like a Logan Brown, but we'll see.
The other thing to remember too here, Doug, it's two different things. One, they could very well have Logan Brown listed in the 2 deep, and that doesn't like burn his red shirt or anything. So that could be something where they have like offensive tackle or like left tackle, Cole Van Lannen, whoever, Michael Fertney for the sake of this, or David Mormon or whoever. And then like the second spot or Logan Brown. And that would be something where like, that's an indication of how they feel about him, but they're like still not willing to like burn that red shirt unless they absolutely have to. So that's one thing. And then two, the other thing, like I mentioned about earlier, I'm extremely curious to see how they allocate the players among the positions coming up here, because like I said, they've got 4 4-star or better offensive tackles coming in this class and next class. So like, I wonder if they start to funnel dudes inside, like they don't know, like Fertney and Fenton both end up inside because they're like, we need to, I mean, these, I know that's not like the intent, but I think the blueprint will kind of show itself at a certain point, because like they know the guys that they've got committed, they have an idea. You know, I mean, there's obviously no guarantee that like certain guys are going to end up in certain spots, but like it'll be interesting to see if they keep Tippmann at tackle or if they move him to guard, knowing that they have two more tackles coming in. And like obviously, again, you don't recruit these dudes to be like, well, I'm recruiting Trey Wettig to only play right tackle because that's what he's got to play because he was a high four-star recruit. But like you can certainly start to get an idea of where they're thinking about dudes at, because you don't recruit four-star plus tackles to only play tackle and only play two of them at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's
unless they bring a ton of interior guys, like at a certain point, you've only like you've got five guys to play, and you got to play your best five. And Rudolph's talked about that. So like, unless you plan on rotating both of your tackles throughout the game, and like I said, there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of probably seven dimensions too far into this. But like at a certain point, I think you'll start to see where the depth chart and where the allocation of players along the offensive line will go. Which will somewhat give you some type of indication on how they feel about these guys or where they plan on playing them. Like I said, we don't know anything about Joe Tippmann yet. He has great hair. But other than that, like he's not, he hasn't played anywhere. And like I said, this is simply me like trying to connect dots that Logan Brown didn't get recruited to play guard. And like I said, with Jack Nelson and Trey Wettig both being four-star guys, one of those guys is likely going to either get bumped inside or they really plan on loading up here on tackles, because at a certain point, like I said, you've only got five O-linemen that can really play at once at least. And if you've got your four best guys or four guys that are really highly regarded at tackle, two of them have got to move somewhere else. Otherwise, you're only playing two of them. So it's, like I said, this is looking way too much into this. But at the same point, it'll give you some type of look as to how they feel about these guys or where they want them, because you get, like I said, you get your five best out there. So, and that's why they moved Michael Dieter to left tackle 2 years ago, because they really wanted to get Biotish into the lineup. And that's you kind of start to see how they feel about guys based on where they're prioritized their playing time and how they get them in. So that wasn't a knock on Cole Van Landen that he wasn't playing left tackle or whatever. It was we think Tyler Biotish is really, really good. And sorry, Mike, but we're going to move you because we know you can play elsewhere. Like, and that's like I said, much more of an endorsement to Tyler Biotish than it is an indictment to anyone else. So at that same point, like, we'll kind of start to see how the chess pieces fall into place here. But I don't know. It'll be fun. Let's see.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, like I said, we're going to break down more. I think we maybe almost did our 2019 way too early spring preview for the offensive line, but we'll come back to that in a couple of weeks once we figure out the schedule for spring ball here on Bucky's Fifth Podcast. But when we come break, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, 2019 Wisconsin walk-on signee Cooper Nelson joins the show to discuss his commitment and just how close he came to joining a rival school. Just sit back, listen to the break, and we'll be back in just a couple.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And we're back here on Bucky's Fifth Podcast. Jake Okorowski here. And joining us, one of the newest members of the class of 2019, officially signed, on his way to Madison coming up in the summer, got Cooper Nelson here. Cooper, how does it feel to have everything done and be a Badger?
It's pretty exciting. I don't know how to explain it, but can't wait and can't get excited to get started.
And, you know, the fun part about this, and we talked a little earlier, just what goes into accepting that walk-on offer? And, you know, for those for the podcast, when did you receive it? And just what went into the process of, you know, realizing you wanted to play at Wisconsin?
Yep. So I received it back in November. And then when I decided I wanted to be there, before that, it was a lot of research into all those schools, and my top three being Minnesota, Iowa State, and Wisconsin. So I really did some in-depth research there as long as the football program and overall academics, because that's what comes first. And I just couldn't pass up on Wisconsin because it had the best of both worlds. So that's where the best fit was for me.
And so, you know, of course, you're the son of former Wisconsin safety Scott Nelson, who played, you know, obviously in the late or early, I say, in the early 1990s. What, you know, how did he help you out? You know, how did the family help you out in this process in terms of just picking which schools and the interest that you had? But what, you know, how did they help you? You know, how did he help you? But how did your family also help you throughout this entire process?
Yep, they were all very open and said, wherever you want to go, we're going to support you no matter where that is. But overall, my dad especially, he being like a college athlete, and he's been through the process, but he was more surprised about how it's changed. But he was just there to help me, and he really talked through it all with me. And what about if this happens? What about if that? And so overall, he was just there, and he was a great rock for me, I guess, to fall back on. And he was just there for me, so I can't thank him enough for that.
And you're from nearby Sun Prairie, which is about 20-25 minutes away from campus. I have friends that live in Sun Prairie, great area, great high school for that matter. How did, you know, playing for Sun Prairie High School, how did it help you prepare for this level?
Yeah, it's been a blast. I can't thank Sun Prairie and their community enough for that. But we have a great coach and coaching staff, and we learn a lot of the stuff. So, and the coaches from Wisconsin really teach the same stuff. So overall, that's been great. And then your teammates, obviously, they push you to be your best. So I can't thank them enough. And overall, with this past summer we had with that explosion in Sun Prairie, that really brought the community together and showed the support we have for one another. So that was pretty cool.
And, you know, when it just playing in just, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but before recording the podcast, but when it comes to just, you know, you tell the coaches how did the process of you committing start, and, you know, the discussions with the family, and then telling the coaches, if you could just, how did that all break down, and how did you make your decision, and what were the coaches' responses?
Yep. So I think it was my last final of first semester. I texted my parents that after that I was done taking it and said, I'm ready to be a Badger. I can't wait to get started. And they just kind of both didn't respond for a little bit. So I was getting a little bit worried. Then I went to basketball practice and came home, and we sat down and talked about it. And then I think the 30th of January, we had school called off, and my mom also had off of work. So we really sat down and talked about the pros and cons. And then the next morning after I slept on my decision, I liked it and I wanted to get started. So I called Wisconsin and told him I'd like to be a Badger.
And, you know, you mentioned some of your finalists, you know, Iowa State and Minnesota Brothers. Just for the Wisconsin fans out there, how close were you to becoming a Gopher, in your opinion?
So, well, I was about to be a Gopher, and then when I talked about it, and I'd say I was about to be a Gopher probably early December, that they offered that preferred walk-on, and then Wisconsin really started to hit me harder then, and it was just an opportunity I couldn't pass up after sitting on it and sleeping on it for a while. And it's just a lot of thought, but overall, as a Wisconsin kid, this was just a great opportunity, and it felt like home, quite honestly.
And just going forward, you know, where are they looking for you to play at the position? I mean, you came, they announced you as a wide receiver. You were in first team All-State wide out by the AP and the WFCA. You're a finalist for the Altoon Award for the state's top senior wide receiver. The accolades go on and on. You caught 13 touchdown passes as a senior alone in 2018. But are they still looking at you up to play wide receiver, and at least to coming in? And what do you think you can bring to that position group?
Yep. Still looking for me to be a wide receiver, and that's what I'm coming in as. And overall, I'm just hoping to bring some competitiveness and use my length to my advantage and just go out there and compete with all the guys and be hardworking with them and just create a great bond with them and make each other better on and off the field.
All right. Now we'll have a little bit more lighter questions for you. We always do this with some of the new commits, the new signees. We've done this with Graham. We did this with Graham Mertz with Hayden Rucci before. So we'll have a little bit of fun. Just some quick hitters real quick. My first question in this segment, Cooper, favorite workout music?
I'd probably say I put on the top hits on the radio and just let that play.
Gotcha. I think Leo Chanel mentioned that he does like classical music or whatnot, which I found interesting. So that's always fun. I always love picking brains just to see what I can put in my playlist as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned with Dior, you play multiple sports. You lettered in baseball, basketball, track, and just overall for the fans, just for their knowledge on this, just what does being a multi-sport athlete do for you? Overall, for the game of football and how it helps you improve on the field?
Yep. Well, for me, I think it allows my body to be used in different ways and then learn how to use my body in those ways, which overall helps me on the field in football. And then it just gives me another chance to go out and compete. And that's what I love to do. So that's why I choose to do all those sports.
I know that, we've talked about it earlier. Your dad, you guys have had season tickets for a while. Growing up in around Madison, around Wisconsin, what's your favorite memory as a bat, growing up from a Wisconsin perspective?
Yep. Well, I think I'd say when Russell Wilson said he wanted to be a Badger, kind of watched his highlights, and I was like, he looks pretty good, but I really wanted to see him in a game, and we were able to use our season tickets, and we went to, I believe it was when Nebraska came to Camp Randall, and it was, I think, their first time playing each other. And we just came out and destroyed them, and it was awesome. I think College Game Day was there, and that's why I was like, holy cow, Russell Wilson's actually the real deal.
Yeah, I remember that season quite well. Cooper, my last question for you here on Bucky Smith Podcast, what's your vert, and how hard can you dunk a basketball since you are a basketball player?
My vert's probably about a 33, 34. And I like to say I can dunk it pretty hard, but my dad always says, oh, you can put it down harder.
See, I'm jealous. I am jealous of that. I'll be honest with you. Me being 5'10 on my good leg on that note. But Cooper, I really appreciate your time, man, jumping on the podcast. Congratulations. And looking forward to covering you down the road when you get here in the summer and into fall camp.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Guys, that's Cooper Nelson, 2019 signee, wide receiver, walk-on for the Wisconsin Badgers. We're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap up the show here on Bucky's Fifth Podcast. Thanks for coming back, folks, to Bucky's Fifth Podcast. Jake Okorowski, Owen Reese, here on this Wednesday evening. We'll get this up later tonight, and you guys will hear this coming up for the week. And we thank you guys for listening to us. We'll tell you more about where to follow us at the end of the show, but we want to do a quick mailbag. We already answered one question. A big thanks again to Morgan for asking earlier, which was perfect because we were going to discuss the topic of John Deason retiring. But the next one from at Super Crawl, KRAL. Do we know if Kyle Peniston might decided to stay at UW, and are there any scoops on position changes prior to spring ball? So first off, thank you, sir, for asking a question there, two questions, which makes our mailbag even better. Technically, when you have the transfer portal, now that's the one thing that's been described where they could always come back to the school. However, when I asked a UW official about this to confirm he was in the transfer portal, but also if he had left the program, he said that is true. That is correct. When I had asked, it wasn't just if he was in the transfer portal, it was, has he left the program? And the UW official confirmed that with me. And so we put it in that article that we had a couple weeks back. Technically, he still could. We'll see what happens with that. And like I said, we don't know where he's going. I mean, if you take a look at, I was looking at even his, right now, not stalling for time or anything, but Owen, I'm looking at his, Kyle's Twitter right now. It says University of Wisconsin on there still. So he's, you know, he has not made, he has not publicly made a decision at all from what we know. And so, I mean, technically he could come back. I don't know if, I don't think he will. But then to the second question, any scoops on position changes prior to spring ball? I think the big one that we know is Caden Lyles to back to the offensive line. That was confirmed back in December. Unless you know anything, I haven't heard any other scoops or any other tidbits about position changes yet. I don't know if there will be. I think I don't really know there will be any changes based off of what, outside of maybe the offensive lineman, depending on where they're playing. Like we've talked about David Mormon possibly playing either tackle or guard and whatnot. I don't really see, yeah, I don't think right now any other position changes outside of Lyles.
No, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. I was looking at the roster a little bit, and yeah, I mean, that's the one. I think if you consider Caden Lyles either, well, moving one back from D tackle to center, but then, or to the O line, but I guess from my end, like moving him from center to guard, I think is probably about the extent on kind of how that'll go. I think they've, and when you get this far into, obviously this is Coach Christ's fifth recruiting class, I think you start to get your program where you want it as far as people at certain positions. You know what you want the team to look like, you know what to look for in those positions. And I think that moving forward, outside of like guys moving from outside to inside or vice versa, linebacker or corner to safety, stuff like that, I really wouldn't envision a ton of stuff. Guys from moving from DN to nose or back and forth, I wouldn't anticipate a ton of stuff like that. Maybe guys from linebacker to fullback or whatever. But I think the longer Coach Christ stays in Wisconsin, I think probably the less and less you'll start to see of that. I guess my other point, though, back to Kyle Pennethon, and again, thanks for the question. I think something that people got to consider too, like he's still got Wisconsin in his Twitter, and that's cool. He's still there, and he's still in school. So part of the assumption, I guess, is that he's going to try to be a grad transfer, or and maybe that's irresponsible to guess that. But at a certain point, you would imagine that he's in his fourth year at UW, either close to graduating or still in school and still values his grades, right? So it's not like he's taking visits to schools or prospective schools yet. And kind of sacrificing that academic time. So I know we discussed a bit earlier, UW had at least made a contact to another school regarding a grad transfer potential or a transfer portal defensive lineman. And I think at that point, that's probably where a lot of the it's a lot of kicking the tires right now. It's not a lot of direct contact between players in programs. You know, like I said, these kids are still in school. It's there's a lot more to it, I think, than just him like leaving. You can leave the program and still be in class and still have a busy academic schedule that way. So we really don't know. He could come back to UW, conceivably, sure. I guess at this point, though, I would probably venture to say that that's not very likely. And at the point, like I said, he probably has an idea, and he may be reaching out to former high school teammates or buddies he knows that play at different schools and kind of trying to put out some feelers. But really at this point, like I said, like it's not like he's going to make some big trip to, and at this point, like I said, it's not paid stuff. He would have to pay his way to fly to a different school or to visit other places. So a lot of stuff going on. I think maybe spring break might be a time where you start to see stuff like that change, but you know, like this, he's still very much a student at this point, and that's probably a lot of Kyle's time at this point.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're assuming he's still a student too. Let's just say that too, where it looks like he's still a student at UW. He hasn't posted up anything on, you know, and not to be a creeper or anything, but he hasn't posted anything up on, you know, really on, I would say, you know, anything on social media, like any tweets outside of some retweets here and there. At least his Instagram really hasn't anything since the Pinstripe Bowl, and then ever since, you know, like he's had a couple of retweets here. So, you know, on Twitter. So I, you know, like I said, we assume that he's still in school. But you know, we confirm he left the football program, but you know, like I said, there's always that chance he could come back. But we don't know exactly the status. I mean, that's how the transfer portal works, but from what we know, he's gone from the program currently. So, a big thanks there. To Super Crawl. Let me just make sure we check I put something up on Facebook real quick just to take a look at just to see who, if anyone else asked. Nope, no one else asked anything else, so we are good to go. But let's take it home, man. Appreciate your time once again, my friend, on this Wednesday evening. We'll have another show coming up tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but next week. And why don't you tell people, so we'll see, I'll tell them where to follow on social media. Follow us on Twitter at B5Q, you at Reese, R-I-E-S-E, draft. Me at Jake Coco, B5Q. Our Instagram page, I got to put up some photos of the basketball game from last night. Facebook, like us on Facebook, because that's where we put all our stories. And Owen, tell us where they can find Bucky's Fifth Quarter, Bucky's Fifth Podcast on the SB Nation Team Brands Network.
Yeah, man, be sure to follow us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you can find your podcasts. Really had a good time doing this so far. We're kind of branching out here a bit, but it's been a good time, and absolutely thank you for your time as well tonight, Jake, and we're going to keep trying to do this. So make sure you keep checking in. Obviously, we're going to keep, as we creep forward, we're going to keep talking Badger basketball, keep talking spring football for the Badgers, and looking position by position to kind of keep handling that stuff. So again, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you can find podcasts. We're out here, we're talking Badgers, and your go-to your place, we are your go-to place, for anywhere to check with Badger stuff. So, again, 5 stars only, pitter patter, and thanks for joining us, and we'll join you again soon.
For Owen Reese, this is Jay Kokorowski. I'll check you guys out next week here on Bucky's Fifth Podcast. Thank you.